Good evening, everyone. You're in the right place at the right time. This is Coast to Coast AM, blasting out of the Mojave Desert like a Scirocco, blazing across the land, slamming into your radio like a supercharged nanoparticle of unobtainium. Greetings from the boldest, bawdiest, most outrageous city in the world, the planetary capital of sun, fun, sin, sex, and secrets, my not-so-humble hometown, Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is George Knapp, your occasional host, designated driver of the airwaves and moderator of tonight's upcoming cacophonous cavalcade of conversation. Thanks for joining us. What's shaking out there? We are still baking and broiling here in the desert. Got a little toasty again today, not fit outside for man nor beast. So a good time to stay indoors, in your truck or in your car, in the air conditioning. And we will help you pass the time for the next 4 hours with scintillating stories about original investigations into the unknown. Two great guests, both highly respected in their fields. In the second half tonight, one of my media brethren, one of the best, if not the best, investigative reporters in Australia, in Australian TV. Ross Coulthart has worked for 60 Minutes, a Down Under. He's won pretty much every prestigious broadcasting award available in that country, has chased organized crime, he's exposed scandals. He's stuck his neck way out to dig up stories that people didn't want to have exposed, and he's lived to tell about it. For some time now, he's been focused his considerable skills on the UFO-UAP story, or mystery, or stories, plural. Like many in his profession, he began as a skeptic about these subjects, but that's not how he's ended up. He's written a thorough and provocative account about where we are now, and it's taken him down some pretty deep rabbit holes to places that we've discussed here from time to time, everything from UFOs and nukes to secret programs, Area 51, Skinwalker Ranch, the Tic Tac and the Nimitz, TTSA and Tom DeLonge, names you would recognize, Bigelow, Elizondo, astronaut Ed Mitchell, Carter, Reagan, Clinton, Bush, the CIA, the NSA, NIDS, BASS, and other acronyms, and an attempt to figure out how all of these might fit together. It's a terrific piece of work from a world-class journalist. And I know you're going to hear from Ross and what he has to say, including some juicy items that he's not made public until tonight. But first, we ride along on a 60-plus year journey with one of the most experienced, most respected paranormal pursuers in the country. This guy started chasing flying saucers back in 1959 while he was just a youngster. That early interest led Stan Gordon to a ringside seat for some of the most perplexing cases and mysteries of all time. And it led him to unexpected places, too, from UFOs to Bigfoot and then to what you'd call cryptid creatures, folklore and legends that turned out not to be mythological at all, but to be real. Stan has spent decades trying to figure out how or if all these things tie together. So strap in for that one coming up in just a few minutes. By the way, if you're out and about tonight, maybe listening to the program while underneath the stars somewhere, keep an eye out for meteors. The Perseid meteor shower is still underway and viewable here in North America. We get some great views of space rocks flaming across the skies out here in the Mojave. So keep your eyes to the skies, folks. On this date, by the way, 25 years ago today, something of note happened here in the West. A Las Vegas businessman named Robert Bigelow hopped on his plane, flew to Vernal, Utah, drove down the road a piece to meet with a property owner and his wife. The guy owned a 480-acre ranch where strange things had been happening for months, maybe years. And before he left, Bigelow cut a deal to buy this property, a place that later would be known as Skinwalker Ranch, 25 years ago today. Bigelow owned the property, as you probably know, for 20 years and sold it to Brandon Fugel, who's expanded the investigation, got a TV show on the air. We had Brandon here a couple of weeks ago. So hopefully there's going to be an update on that coming soon. Our webmaster, Lex Lonehood, and I have pulled together our usual assortment of items and oddities culled from various media sources around the world. We call it Knapp's News. You can find it on the Coast to Coast AM website. Among the stories there tonight, if you've got nothing better to do for the next year or so, how about being locked down in a NASA facility designed to look like an outpost on Mars? NASA wants to put a team into a Martian outpost and see how they do for the long term. We have a link to the story and how you can apply. And I'd say if any Coast listener gets chosen for that, we'll have to do interviews before and after, then ask you to take some notes during that adventure. We have a pair of UFO stories, UAP stories, both of which deal with the politics and difficulties of disclosure, One of those stories is from the Washington publication The Hill, which reports that the lack of honesty about UFOs is a holdover from the darkest days and paranoia of the Cold War. And there is an up-to-the-minute look also about what might be the landing spot for a new UFO-UAP study program. Might it end up inside the Space Force? I think there's a pretty good chance that decision may have already been made, though no one's going to say that on the record right now. Also in Naps News, an update from Mystery Wire about animal mutilations. Those cases are still happening. They're still popping up, most recently in the Pacific Northwest. There's been more than 10,000 of them over the years. No one's ever been caught, and no one's really been able to figure them out. But we explore one possible angle. Those stories and more in Naps News. And while you're on the website, check out how to become a Coast Insider. If you subscribe for a year, the cost is 15 cents a day. Gives you access to a huge archive of programs and interviews, including the Art Bell Vault. You can listen as often as you want, anytime you want. It's a great deal. Ditto for George Norrie's television program, Beyond Belief. George engages with fascinating guests and explores intriguing subjects similar to what he does here on the radio. Subscriptions are available. With that, let's assume the position. Bring in the dog and the cat and the family goat. Put on a pot of Joe. Slide your body into those silky summer jammies and your toes into your favorite bunny slippers. Plop yourself down in a comfy spot. Turn down the lights and crank up that radio because we're about ready to rumble. In a moment, Stan Gordon's long and winding road through a forest of paranormal mysteries. I'm George Knapp, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Stan Gordon has been researching UFO sightings, Bigfoot encounters, and other mysterious events in Pennsylvania since, get this, 1959. He's been involved with the investigation of thousands of unusual incidents, including the principal investigator on an incident called the Kecksburg UFO. He's also been taking calls about UFOs and other strange reports from the public since 1969 on this hotline he established. It's still taking in information. It's been unbelievably, it's been 6 years since Stan was here last talking to George Norrie. Way too long. Stan, great to have you back on Coast to Coast.
Thanks, George. Thanks for having me back on the program.
You know, you and I had a chance to speak recently, first time in a long time, and it occurred to me after we talked that I didn't ask you something I wanted to ask. You started down this road a long time ago, 1959, when you were just a youngster. And I wonder, did your parents ever try to talk you out of this? They figure, oh, it's just a phase. He's talking about aliens and UFOs. He'll grow out of this.
No, as I recall, they were very supportive. I was one of those young kids who was interested in science and electronics. And I was building crystal radios back in those days. And they were open-minded, and I was open-minded, and they seemed to support what I was doing.
Were you ever involved, you know, Art Bell, you'll recall, was a big ham radio operator. Were you ever in communication with him through that medium?
No, I was not.
How did it start for you? Was it a case or a book, or what started you down this path?
Well, it was in around Halloween in 1959. I had received an AM radio as a gift. And I was tuning around the AM dial that night, and it was a radio show that had me talking about strange happenings. They were talking about haunted houses and flying saucers and strange creatures, and I was curious listening to all of these reports. I wanted to know, are these people making these stories up, or is there something to it? So I began to make a lot of frequent trips to our local Greensburg library, read all the books they had on the subject, and I started cutting articles out of the newspapers, making scrapbooks of incidents that were being reported. If something would appear in one of the local papers or somebody claimed they saw something unusual, well, I called them on the phone and asked them about what they saw. And I was 16 years old in 1965 when the incident happened near Kecksburg, Pennsylvania, about 12 miles from where I live. And at that point, I began to go out into the field to investigate UFOs and Bigfoot and other phenomena. And basically, I've been out in the field ever since that time investigating all these reports. And in the late 1960s, I got involved with a small group in Pittsburgh called the UFO Research Institute. It was a small group of many professionals that were scientists and engineers, and that's where Stanton Friedman started. He was working for Westinghouse at the time. I was the youngster of the group, as I recall, but I already had a lot of experience interviewing witnesses, so I became their telephone sighting coordinator. So when a report would come in, I would do some of the initial interviews and determine if the case warranted further investigation. And I stayed with that group until they shut down, And in 1969, I decided I was going to try to set up a hotline for the public to report UFO sightings. So I began to make contact with the local news media and the police departments around here and asked them and said, look, if you get these reports, even if you're not going to look into it, if you at least let the public know that I'm around, I'd appreciate it. Well, it seemed like within weeks after information got out about my hotline that the phone in my home was ringing off the hook day and night. And it became apparent very quickly that this was a lot more than I could handle on my own, so I decided I was going to try to set up and organize a research group, a volunteer group, to investigate the reports. So in 1970, I founded the first of three groups. That was the Westmoreland County UFO Study Group, and the group was kind of unique in that most of the people involved were specialists. We had scientists, engineers, technicians, and a lot of these people back then worked for companies such as Westinghouse, Gulf, Alcoa, or connect with universities and colleges. I had police officers. I had former military intelligence people, and they're all volunteer. We all did it out of our own time and pocket around our full-time jobs. And I had it set up to respond to cases 24 hours a day. And by 1973, we had expanded to cover the whole state of Pennsylvania. And to our surprise, we began to get referrals from the news media and law enforcement across the state, and we were very, very busy. And we were very lucky because we had no idea what was about to take place in 1973. And I'm sure we can talk about that massive UFO and Bigfoot wave, which is what really began to uncover some very strange phenomena that I sure was not expecting to be running into.
Yeah, we'll get into that in a moment. So you got this 24-hour hotline that actually began in 1969. You've kept it going all this time. I can imagine the cops and news media, they don't want to deal with UFOs and Bigfoot. They're happy to pass it on to somebody. So you get overwhelmed by the number of calls.
And it never stopped. This reason is yesterday, which in my time zone would have been Saturday evening, we had a very interesting UFO report came in from about 35 miles outside of Pittsburgh. So I received reports on quite a regular basis. I get many calls on current and past reports, and it's nonstop. The public has no idea what the UFO phenomena is going, the activity that's taking place. It goes on all year round in all type of weather conditions, in daylight as well as at night, and it doesn't seem as though the media is really representing this, that, you know, these are something you see only on occasion, but these reports are much more frequent than people realize.
So you're getting these reports from all over the state of Pennsylvania. You know, we think about UFO or paranormal hotspots. We think about in the West, you know, New Mexico or Skinwalker or Sedona, places like that. Tell me about Pennsylvania, which, you know, it does not have a high profile, in at least to the general public, but is, in essence, a hotspot based on the number of calls that you get to this day.
Oh, yeah, it's just amazing. I mean, historically, you've got, depending on the anomaly we're talking about, but you go back to the Native Americans, there's many accounts from the 1800s of newspapers across Pennsylvania referring to Bigfoot. And, of course, back then they didn't call it Bigfoot. They called it the wild man of the woods, the wild man of the forest. And there's actually newspaper accounts from across Pennsylvania going back to the 1890s of strange airships and objects seen in the sky. And I've seen other accounts in the early 1920s and then reports from the 1940s right up to the present from newspaper accounts everywhere. So it's been an area there has always been a lot of history. And one of the areas that I've concentrated a lot on that I started to find out about was in the late 1960s called the Chestnut Ridge. And the Chestnut Ridge is a fascinating area. It's a mountain range that extends through Westmoreland, Fayette, and Indiana County here in southwest Pennsylvania, extends down to a few miles outside of Morgantown, West Virginia, around Preston County. And this area, which is around 100 miles long, and it is an active area year after year for UFO sightings, Bigfoot and cryptid encounters, mystery booms, all kind of anomalies have been reported for years along the ridge. And that's as recent as in the last couple of weeks, in fact. And so it's very, very interesting. And then there's ongoing sightings everywhere. There's probably not an area in Pennsylvania that we don't have records of some type of reports. So in Pennsylvania, we have not only multitudes of UFO sightings, but for years we have lots of Bigfoot sightings. I've interviewed hundreds of people who have seen Bigfoot. Sightings reported every year. We have reports, even recent reports of Thunderbird sightings, out-of-place animals like Black Panther reports, and all kind of very strange cryptid reports. And some of these things are very strange and unusual. And these are some of the things that some people probably never even heard about before.
We're going to definitely ask about that. The concept of hotspots, I don't know, maybe Chestnut Ridge qualifies as a hotspot since it's had ongoing activity for as long as you're sharing with us. Is it just a matter of people not looking, that everywhere is a hotspot if you look deep enough?
I would say that from the reports that I get from the public and the multitudes of people I've interviewed over the years, that in some cases, depending again on the situation, whether it's a UFO or Bigfoot, some people just happen to be at the right place at the right time. However, and we can go back in some of the early cases I looked into where I began to realize this. What I began to realize back in 1972, for example, there was an area called Humphrey Road outside of Greensburg. And people lived there for years along this large wooded area. But in the spring and summer of 72, different residents around there began to independently contact me. They had never had this before. They began to hear screams and cries. They were hearing something bipedal heavy walking in the woods. They began to see strange lights around the area at night. They were finding footprints, large footprints they could not identify. In one case, people saw this tall, broad-shouldered creature chasing dogs in the area. People were finding strange footprints around their home, and they were seeing these small, little, brilliant spheres of light. And these were small ones, about 1 to 2 inches in diameter, like oversized fireflies, that about the size of a golf ball, that was very low and very close to their homes and in their bushes. And this went on for quite a period of time. And that, I thought, was very, very interesting. And then 1973 comes around, and that's when it was just an amazing time. Starting in January of 1973, we had the biggest UFO wave ever documented anywhere in the country. And this went on, all year. And there were hundreds and hundreds of UFO reports that were coming in. And back in those days, there wasn't a lot of communication medium like we had today. So back then, many people would be calling the police or the news media to report what was going on. So a lot of these reports were initially coming into some of these different agencies. And hundreds of UFO reports, and again, let me say right up front, my position has always been to try to find a logical explanation for whether it be a UFO sighting or a Bigfoot or cryptid or other phenomena. And that's what we still continue to do. So, yes, there were many misidentifications of objects that looked strange under different conditions. So, of course, you have bright planets and stars. You have meteors. Of course, in recent years, a lot of Starlink satellite reports. You had automated searchlight beams. A lot of things you could explain away. But there were many, many cases, for example, just in 73 alone, of large structured objects low to the ground, in some cases hovering over vehicles, hovering over highways. There were landing reports. It was an amazing time period. And back then, a lot of the local newspapers and some of the statewide and then some of the national news were picking some of these stories up. So a lot of people were beginning to hear about these type of reports. So all this UFO activity in itself was amazing. We were busy day and night with my teams just investigating UFO cases. But it got so much more fascinating in the summer of 73 when we had the biggest Bigfoot outbreak ever documented. And this went on into 1974. And I can tell you, there have been Bigfoot sightings reported here in Pennsylvania every year since then, but nothing close to the number of cases that occurred in 73. And many of those Bigfoot sightings were at very close range, and many were in daylight. In some cases, we had 2 to 3 creatures seen together. My teams would get out to some of these locations within minutes to hours after they occurred. So we were interviewing the witnesses. You saw the emotional response. Sometimes you saw the very unusual animal reactions, but there were times where there was physical evidence, and we made cast of many different footprints. And that's when things began to get even stranger. And that's when reports began to come in from widespread areas over a period of time. And some of the things that we're finding at the scene that began to make us aware that we're dealing with something here that is apparently much stranger than just an unknown animal, which is what I thought we were dealing with for the many years I was involved initially. But The more I know about the phenomena now, the stranger it is.
Yeah, we're going to get into that. I'm assuming you're leading up to the idea that at where you're seeing Bigfoot, you're also seeing what we'd call flying saucers, that there's a crossover effect. And I want to get into how you dealt with that then and how you deal with it now. We're talking with Stan Gordon about his amazing 60-plus years investigating paranormal activity across the state of Pennsylvania. I know storms or tropical storm causing problems there in the southeast, another one lurking out in the ocean, ready to come in to land, and a third one I think I read today was further out that might be problems. So everybody batten down the hatches, stay inside, listen to the radio. We're talking with Stan Gordon about a 60-plus year venture of his into the paranormal, a lot of strange trails that's led him down. We're going to hear some of those stories right after this on Coast to Coast AM. So, Stan Gordon, you have this hotline set up. Tips come in. People want to share information, evidence, photos, videos, or not videos back in those days, but videos now. You have to be able to gently, I guess, tell people what you recorded, the evidence you have collected, is not some alien spaceship. It is a, take your pick, it's a cloud. It's a plane. It's birds misidentified. You have to be able to level with them and explain this without getting them ticked off. I know that for me, I get people sending me photos all the time, and most of them, I'm not a photo analyst. I'm not an expert, so I can't tell them for sure what it is. But some of them, I'm able to reliably tell them, look, that's something I've seen before, and here's what it is. And they generally get mad about it when you tell them that they're not going to make $1 million off their video or their photos. How do you handle it?
Well, that's true. And, of course, some people, yes, they do get upset when you try to explain that what you're seeing is the planet Venus. And but the majority of people, they're listening, and they're happy to find a solution to it. But, yes, I receive quite a number of photos and videos in here, which we take a look at, including in recent weeks. And some of them are interesting. There's a very good photo analyst I'm involved with, has been involved in my research studies for years, too, down in Fayette County. And anyhow, he's very good at looking at these things. And unfortunately, a lot of these photos coming in or videos, the resolution is not that good. The objects are too small, so you can't always do a really good study on them. But some of the ones we've seen over the years have been very, very interesting.
So let's go back to this 1973 flap. It wasn't just in Pennsylvania, though. It was across the country, right?
Well, the wave that we had here started in January and continued all year. But in 1973, the United States actually did have a very major wave of UFO activity, kind of peaked in the fall of 73. And there was a lot of national media coverage about it as well. But it's not to the extent it was going on in Pennsylvania, which was going on all year long with UFOs, and then starting in the summer with all the Bigfoot activity, which continued into 1974.
So, you know, you were walking up to the edge of suggesting that there was an apparent connection between Bigfoot and UFOs. As you know, people in the UFO field don't want to hear a story that says that, hey, by the way, we saw Bigfoot standing next to this flying saucer, or that there's some kind of connection. And the Bigfoot people feel the same. Have you experienced that same reaction from both of those camps?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. I mean, after we did some of our investigations back in those years, back in the 70s, I began to publish some of those accounts. And I was actually in touch with a lot of researchers around the country and out of the country. And as I'll share with your listeners some of the cases we looked into, I was finding out that many of those other people had similar type of things going on, but they were very, very reluctant to talk about it or publish the reports because they were afraid of being laughed at by their peers. My position was, I don't have the answers as to what's going on. This is what we're finding. I put it out there for the public and for other researchers to be aware of. And I can tell you, after so many years, this is ongoing more and more. And in more recent years, we're hearing a lot more about this phenomenon now throughout the United States and other countries. There are more and more people, both in the UFO and Bigfoot field, who are becoming more open-minded and are aware of these reports. And many people in the Bigfoot field are aware of these type of incidents. And one of the phenomena that I've been dealing with for years and years, I call them mini UFOs. And I've been investigating these cases going back to, the 1960s. And these are fascinating. I think this is a very important part of the UFO phenomenon that many people don't know about or really discuss. And these small, what I call mini UFOs, they're generally about a foot or two in diameter, sometimes solid metallic, in some cases just bright luminous light sources of various colors. But what's so intriguing, these are not high in the sky. These spherical objects, and again, generally spherical, but there are some other configurations that have been reported, but they're low to the ground. They've approached people very closely, even in daylight. I've had incidents where they've paced vehicles. I've had cases where they've actually entered moving vehicles with that had open windows and entered people's homes through open windows and moved around and went back out. I remember one case from years ago that I always thought was kind of interesting. This happened up in northern PA, probably back in the 80s, I'm trying to remember. But a woman told me she's in her kitchen cooking one morning when the window was open, and one of these small spheres comes into the kitchen and is floating around. And her reaction is she grabs her broom and starts striking it. And as I recall, she said it broke into two identical little spheres. They floated around, went back out the window. But what's interesting, though, about these small spheres of whatever these things are, and they're showing up more and more around the country. In more recent years, around the country and other parts of the world, especially in areas where there's Bigfoot activity, many Bigfoot research and others have reported this strange light phenomena or these small spheres of light that have been actively seen by many researchers here in Pennsylvania and other areas and are commonly reported. And for example, I'll give you this account. This is from May of 2019 outside of Pittsburgh. This was a gentleman who happened to wake up around 1 o'clock in the morning, have to look out his back window, and it's all woods back there. And he's seeing this, what appears to be a small Bigfoot, about 4.5 to 5 feet tall, covered with dark hair, longer hair on the head than the back. It's walking upright on two legs. The arms are extended down to the knees. And as the thing is moving along, as it moves into a particular area of the woods and enters it, about 3 seconds later, at that exact position where the creature entered the woods, a bright sphere of light about 3 to 4 inches in diameter suddenly appears. And the witness said it was similar looking directly into the front of a flashlight. It's about 4 feet above the ground. The light then moves a short distance for about 3 seconds and then vanishes. A few seconds later, the light reappears about 10 feet away. This time, the sphere emits a bright beam of light about 10 to 12 feet long. And after a few seconds, the beam and the object disappears. But so these are the type of things that are fantastically interesting. And back during that wave of 1973, in one case we had north of Pittsburgh, there were two witnesses waiting for a friend, and they see this around a 7-foot-tall, hair-covered creature with white hair. You don't hear about the white Bigfoot very often, but we do get those kind of reports. So here's this creature running across the road towards the woods, which in itself was unusual, but in one of its hands, it's carrying a small glowing ball of light. And a short time later, this object passes over the area, projects a beam of light down into the woods where that creature ran into.
You had any cases of UFOs, craft, that land and Bigfoot-type creatures are seen in proximity to a craft that's on the ground?
There were some reports of landings, and there was one specific case that I always would think about. It's probably one of the most famous cases contained within this type of phenomena. And this occurred October 25th, 1973. I'll give you the short part of the story. We could talk for hours and hours about this case alone. I remember it very well because it was, I think, kind of a life-changing experience for my team and myself when we arrived in that area during the early morning hours up in Fayette County. About 10:30 that night, I received a phone call from a state trooper from the Uniontown Barracks in Fayette County. He had just come back from investigating this multiple witness UFO landing with two Bigfoot creatures in the field at the same time. And it was very interesting. The trooper called me. He sounded pretty shook up, and he said he thought there was a good possibility there was something still on the farm in the pasture. He asked me if I could send up a team as soon as possible. So it's already late at night, but, yeah, we gather our equipment. We gather our radio equipment, our radiation meters, and other equipment. We found our way up to Fayette County. And the story was about 9 o'clock that evening, about 15 people in that rural area, they see this object about as big as a barn. It's a big red sphere, about 100 feet off the ground, silent and moving slowly downward towards the pasture. And the story somewhat focuses on this one fellow was a farmer's son who went out to visit his family who owned the farm. He's riding down the farm road, and he sees this object, and he sees people standing outside looking at this thing, and it looks like it's coming down. So he decides to go to a higher location to get a better view. And at the house he went to, there were two young boys, and they're all watching this thing, and they decide they want to go up and investigate and see what this thing is. So the three of them, they go over and stop over at his dad's farm, and he grabs a 30-06 and a handful of ammunition. Within that ammunition, I was told there were two tracers. So for the hunters out there, they're familiar. When you fire the trace, you just get this luminous trail. Anyhow, as they're in their vehicle, in the truck, they're riding down the farm road towards the pasture. The dogs around the area are going crazy. They hear this high-pitched whining noise and these baby crying sounds. So everything's getting louder as they get closer to the pasture. They angle their truck, leave the headlights on so they can see their path going up the hill. And as they're going up the hill, they realize it looks like something's draining the power in the headlights. They had never seen that before. Anyhow, as they're walking up the hill, they finally make it to the top, and they're standing there, and they're looking over the field, and they can't believe what they're seeing. About 250 feet away is this object that's on the ground or right above it. But now it's not a complete sphere. It's like a big white dome, like a half a sphere. It's about 100 feet in diameter, bright white, making this loud whining noise. And they're just standing there in amazement. They can't believe what this thing is. They're trying to figure it out. But then their attention is drawn to this barbed wire fence about 75 feet away. Along that barbed wire fence are these two tall creatures, one behind the other, moving slowly along the barbed wire fence, moving their direction. The one in the front is the biggest one. It's about 8 feet tall. The one behind it's about 7 feet tall. These things are covered with long, dark, matted, I believe it was brownish, grayish hair, and they have no neck. The arms are so long, they're almost down to the ground. They have large, luminous, green, glowing eyes, and they're making this loud, whining, baby crying sound. Well, the one young fellow is so scared, he runs out of the field. And the other one starts yelling at the older fellow with the 30-06, shoot at him, shoot him. So the guy fires his first shot. He fires that first shot. It's a tracer. It just had that luminous trailing. He fires the second shot, which is the second tracer. And what's interesting is the largest of the two creatures makes a loud whining, crying sound. It reaches out as though to grab at that tracer. And the moment it does that, that large object in the field physically vanishes and disappears. It doesn't take off. It's just gone. So most of the luminosity is gone. The sound stops. The creatures turn around, start walking back along the fence line. And at that point, the fellow now has loaded his 30-06. He's firing live ammo at these creatures. And until he passed away, he always said to me, he said, I'll never forget how I was pumping live ammo, especially in that big one. How it kept staring at me with those glowing green eyes, and there's no effect on them whatsoever. So they ran back to their truck, went back to the farmhouse, told the family what happened, took them to a neighbor's, and that's when they called the state police. And a trooper arrives about 45 minutes later, and the witness said, look, just forget about it. You're going to think I'm crazy. And a trooper said, we had a report of two similar creatures up on the mountain the night before. I have to investigate the incident. So they go up into the troop car up in the area looking for evidence, and the trooper told me, as he's looking around, the area where the object was on the ground was self-luminescent and glowing, about 100 feet or more in diameter. He told me that the farm animals wouldn't go anywhere near it. He said it felt like the temperature was maybe a little bit warmer within that area. He said the glow extended up about a foot up off the ground. And he told me, he said, if I had a newspaper, I'm pretty sure I could have read that newspaper from the glow coming off the area. To make the story short, both the witness and the trooper went back to the barracks. I was told they were both separately interviewed about what happened. Then they called me to send up my team. And things got even more interesting during the night. And it was a fascinating case. There was a lot of interviews and a lot of investigation done on that case for a long, long time. And there was a very interesting follow-up case, which might consider or rather may have concerned what you might call MIBs. So I'd be glad to tell you about that if you're interested.
I'm going to put that on my list of things we still need to cover. Let me ask you this. You have a working theory about how these things fit together, why you would see a Bigfoot-type creature in the same place where you're seeing these little tiny glowing orbs, these mini UFOs, or Bigfoot with a flying saucer sitting on the ground. Do they arrive together? Are they part of the same thing? Are they the same thing in different forms? Does one here to protect the other one? How do they relate? How do they fit together?
And it's a very good series of questions. I don't think anybody has the answers. One thing I want to point out at this, what I want to point out is that I am not suggesting that whatever these objects are that are being seen with the Bigfoot phenomena are extraterrestrial spacecraft, because we don't know what the UFO phenomena is. I said years ago from the many, many cases I investigated, there's indication that we may be dealing with more than one origin to the unknown category. So when I got involved in this so many years ago, everything was that these unknown objects were probably extraterrestrial. Well, the more I know about the phenomenon, I'm not so sure that's the case anymore. I think it may be a certain number, may possibly be extraterrestrial, but I think whatever we're dealing with, and there's so many cases for this now, that we're dealing with a phenomena that has a physical and a non-physical component to it. And I'm sure you found this in many of the cases you've been involved with as well, that whatever these objects are, they're able to perform flight maneuvers beyond our technical capabilities. They can suddenly just appear and disappear. They at times change physical form. They sometimes even look very solid or metallic. But in some cases, we have this begin to slowly fade away and disappear. In some cases, like the sighting we had just a couple days ago, we have reports of these very large, sometimes triangular objects where people can see a solid outline of this large object moving across the sky, but they can see through it. And then in some cases, we have incidents where these things, even in daylight, enter clouds, but they never exit the clouds. So there appears to be both a physical and a non-physical component to some of the UFO phenomena we're dealing with. And again, there may be more than one phenomena involved here. And so I'm not suggesting that Bigfoot is extraterrestrial. For a lack of a better term, I think we're dealing with something that's interdimensional. And I should tell you about the case that convinced me that this is probably what we're dealing with, if you have time to talk about that.
We do have time, just not right now. We're going to a break in about 45 seconds. So you do have sort of a working theory that they're related. We just don't understand how. And then they're not necessarily extraterrestrial, although we probably don't know enough to close the door on that permanently for some of these cases. So it could actually be more than one answer to all this stuff.
That is correct. And it's much more complicated because, as you'll find out, there are similar incidents and similar locations at a Skinwalker Ranch that I've been looking to for years and years in Pennsylvania. From what I hear, it's going on more and more around the country. And in some of these locations, you've got other phenomena, various cryptids and all kind of things going on that are very, very strange.
All right. The idea of hotspots is certainly on our agenda to discuss tonight. Also, want to ask about whether or not people take things home with them, that something attaches to them when they witness something weird like this. Talking with Stan Gordon about his paranormal journey over the last 60-plus years. We'll be back in a little bit to continue the conversation.